program took...
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Yeah, hard to believe, but June is rapidly disappearing, and we actually got some sunshine here in Illinois. Nice hot day today, but it is humid. Well, we want to dedicate this show, as we talked about last week, to Steve Robinson. Steve Robinson was an incredible individual in the veterans community and in the military. I'm a little bit on his bio to get an idea of what Steve did. His accomplishments are staggering. Stephen Robinson entered the Army in September of 1981, and on completion of basic training and airborne school, he was assigned to C Company of the 1st of the 75th Ranger Battalion. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the best in the Army, where he earned his Ranger Tab and Black Beret. Steve Robinson has served in a wide variety of assignments that include the Ranger Battalion, 24th Infantry Division, 1st of 10 Special Forces, Ranger Instructor, the Florida Phase, Long Range Surveillance Detachment, Team Leader in Korea. That's a LERP, ladies and gentlemen. The best of the best, military science instructor, and then finally as NCOIC, preliminary analysis group with OSAGWE. That's our old buddies, Dr. Rotzker and Mikey Kilpatrick. Then he went on to an incredible thing working with NGWRC as executive director, led the charge trying to solve the problems and get care for everybody. So, ladies and gentlemen, for Steve Robinson, our hats are off to you, and big, thank God we know you're an angel in heaven helping us. Well, let's go on and talk about the VA problems. I mean, who we got on? Denise, are you there by chance? Okay,
I'm here.
Know Patricia's there.
I'm here.
Well,
and let's see if we have Lawrence. Lawrence, are you on board? Lawrence Green? Nope.
Okay.
Doug, are you there?
Yeah. All right, well, let's, you know, what we've been doing for the last month and a half, and we've been leading the charge here on Warrior Connection along with a lot of other fine people, whole group of people and organizations, have been leading the charge trying to get medical care for all veterans of our nation. And despite all we attempted to do and despite the internal reports and documents acknowledging the health effects of all toxic exposures and everything during wartime, in all the reports, the VA, Department of Veteran Affairs, as a conscious choice, and again, the documents are out there, decided not to acknowledge what has happened and provide medical care. Well, as everybody knows now, for about the last month and a half, all this stuff is coming up to the forefront, thanks to a lot of people, but it's a total nightmare. And the nightmare never ends. Patricia, you ended up having a nightmare, and again, that you're working on the last few days, correct?
Yes, it's true, dear. It's Patricia Axelrod, folks. I conduct a Desert Storm think tank and all veterans advocate. And I want to give you my contact information because I want to reach out to all of you veterans, all of you family members of veterans, wives, sisters, and brothers. I want you to call me if you have been a victim of the VA. I know we are dedicating this program to Steve, and of course I knew him in the early days of his endeavor to help what was then called the victims of Desert Storm Syndrome. I knew him in Washington, D.C., and he was an erstwhile warrior. But there's another person I'd like to dedicate this program to, and his name is Lawrence. And Lawrence served in Vietnam, and he was a recipient of a Purple Heart Award, and he died right outside of the VA in North Chicago. He died trying to get help. He died being turned away as his son, Terrell Green, who I invited to join us on this program tonight, as his son was trying to get him admitted through the ER. The VA was taking some great delight in shuttling him from the front door to the emergency room and back again, refusing to admit him. And while they refused to admit him or treat him, 25 minutes went by and he died right outside of the VA. And this was just this past week. Now, I want to know, Doug, does that tell you that anything has changed?
No, nothing's changed because, as we already know, we've talked about it on the radio show, We got Aaron Barnes from down here who died a while ago at the VA down here. And again, all the known exposures, DU, the medical orders were out there, and he was shuffled around, and they denied him. When his family took him in for care, they denied any correlation or any medical problems. And then when they finally acknowledged it outside of the VA, it was too late for him. And then we've got John Sergeant First Class John Sitton. We've got Command Sergeant Major Jim Runge. We got Andres Carnegie Bopp. God, he's a legend in the field, the community of medical medicine in the Army. And then we go on and on and on. And Bill Orrell, who cleaned up all the stuff in Kuwait when Doha blew up and also brought all captured and destroyed equipment back for me where we did all that work. I mean, all the DU contamination. He died of cancer. The numbers just continue to increase, and the medical care just continues to get worse. I mean, the latest story right now, they're acknowledging, totally acknowledging on the latest story on Army Times right now, that care for women is a complete disaster and a catastrophe. Well, how long have we known that, Patricia?
Oh, I've known it for 30 years that women have received worse care than men from the VA, and certainly that's the case also in the active duty ranks. Let me emphasize this again about Lawrence. Lawrence died actually in the parking lot of the VA in North Chicago, in the parking lot, as his son was trying to get him help. And that's just last week. Again, I emphasize this. Here's a man who served honorably, served 7 years, served in Vietnam, was a recipient of a Purple Heart, and as an aside, was on the Agent Orange Registry, and died in the parking lot of the VA.
You know, the Agent Orange nightmare just continues on and on and on, because every time we turn around on Agent Orange, there's just total more denials. We still have the guys that flew the actual missions. They're literally still having to fight to try and get their medical care. This is the guys that were on Ranch Hand. I mean, I've ran into more than one. We had an individual down here. We did a murder mystery over in Peoria, Illinois, at the real gambling boat that they have over there. And the individual came up to us and he said, "I was in Vietnam, Agent Orange," you know, and all of us, it was a Veterans Day murder mystery, so all of the vets were introduced in the area, in the audience, and in the cast. And he said, "I still can't get my medical care." What we did at that time is provided him a total copy of the May 5th, 1990 report that Admiral Elmo Zumwalt wrote for the VA, confirming all the health effects of Agent Orange, confirming that they were lying, cheating, and stealing, and doing everything to avoid liability. And he had to come clean because he is the man that authorized the use of Agent Orange during Vietnam. His own son died of Agent Orange, and eventually Elmo also died of a cancer. So, I mean, this report is out there, but all efforts we've had to try and get the VA, and most recently, to get the U.S. Air Force to hand it out and acknowledge that report exists with the known contamination all over down here at Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul, Illinois. And again, the Air Force denies it, but what we have is the individual who has all the cancers, confirmed health effects, and is dying. He came here and acknowledged doing it. Not a story. The man told us he did it. Incredible. Michael Glazer out of Florida. I mean, Patricia, can you imagine the courage that it takes to come and tell the truth, even though the Air Force and DOD and the VA don't want it told?
Well, yeah, I it does take extraordinary courage, but let me, if I might, add an ironic note to the story of Admiral Zumwalt. As I'm sure you know, Admiral Zumwalt also headed up one of the presidential advisory committees looking at what has now been called Persian Gulf War illness.
And I testified with him, as Denise Nichols did, at the National Academy of Sciences. He lied through his teeth, totally lied through his teeth.
Exactly.
We got up there and told the truth, and man, was he mad at us afterwards.
Oh, exactly, exactly. I testified, too, before him, and I think it was in Texas, but I can't recall where. I brought it up. While I was testifying, I brought up the disgrace of the cover-up of of Agent Orange, which he clearly acknowledged. And yet, when I established the corollary between the toxin of Agent Orange and the death that it caused, Admiral Zumwalt really did not stand up and did not defend the soldiers who had been made ill in the Persian Gulf. So that was slightly ironic. I find that ironic. And as an aside now, in the aftermath of that war, Schwarzkopf is also gone, isn't he?
Pardon?
General Schwarzkopf is gone.
Yeah, General Schwarzkopf. Yeah, he also died. I mean, for me, I mean, considering, and you've seen the orders, and General Schwarzkopf personally assigned me to clean up the DU mess. People, you know, in the military, you know, deny that it happened, but you can't change the reality. And Schwarzkopf and all these senior leaders, they knew about the health effects. They acknowledged what had happened. They knew about all what was going to happen. For example, when we made the decision in December of 1990 to blow up all Iraq's chemical and biological stockpiles in place, stockpiles that the U.S. Army had given to them, repeat, stockpiles the U.S. Army had given to them, that's a Regal Commission report that Jim Toot did for the U.S. Senate, and yet they, you know, the whole thing is out there, and you don't see these senior leaders coming back to help us. I mean, General Shinseki personally, I mean, and this is coming going to get him legally, he signed the medical order in 1993 based on our input. And, Patricia, you've seen the documents. You've got them. So he really did do it. And he ordered medical care in 1993 for all DU casualties. As we know, we can't get it. And Aaron Barnes, he died after being denied DU medical care, as did Jim Runge, as did Bill Orrell, as did, you know, they go on and on and on.
Well, and I hate to speculate about General Schwarzkopf, but and certainly he was not anywhere near the front, although he did his best to give the impression that he was near the front, but he was in the theater.
Well, he was back and forth up front, so he did. I mean, after, you know, when all this stuff left and Rollo and I were right there when they went up to go up to Sopwan, and they departed from up at KKMC is where the helicopter actually left, you know, so the car pulled up, the incredibly beautiful car. It was like, I don't know how to even describe it, a Lincoln Continental.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he got around in, obviously for safety and everything else, but he's a four-star general. And, you know, said, well, you know, you guys are a chemical expert. Will you guys come along? And Rollo and I said, So we sat there, and you seen the picture. We took the picture, and he left. And, you know, all this stuff turned into a nightmare. But none of these senior leaders,
I'm not talking about
KKMC.
I'm talking about right up there with 24ID, right at the front. He was not to be seen there. But with all of that said, it is ironic. He wasn't that old. And when he died, and I wonder to what degree his own personal exposures contributed. And while we're at it, let's bring up Powell, General Powell, who stands, you know, at every Memorial Day gathering and on television and 4th of July, stands there saluting the soldiers who served and so forth and so on. He knows the truth, and he has not spoken up. So shame on General Powell for this as well.
Yeah, the senior leaders have abandoned us. And again, the thing is, bothers me, and Shinseki, I'm glad he's gone, personally, because of the disaster he caused. He knew the truth, and he decided to go along with the status quo and deny everything. And now what's horrific is we're getting ready to go back into Iraq again for a war. And again, it's still a civil war as it was before. And, you know, everybody tries to make it out, and you can read this yourself or figure it out. It doesn't take much. As if all these other groups are some external organization. No, these are individuals. They're in their countries, in their community, that are fed up with what's going on, everything. But this goes all the way back to the Sykes-Picot Treaty in 1917, where the British and the French and then the U.S. joined in, decided to break up the Middle East for their own economic and resource gain. I mean, that's where the first real assignment started. Did it start before that, Patricia, or was that when it all began?
I should say that's about the time, and perhaps even a little earlier. But, you know, the bottom line, Doug, you know that I was over there just as the war was winding down, although, in fact, while most Americans were not aware of it, the U.S. was covertly bombing Iraq overtly bombing the so-called no-fly zone, but covertly bombing Iraq's food crops with various agents to destroy their crops. But at any rate, I was over there, and I was doing BDA, bomb damage assessment, and I got into Baghdad. I might add I was held captive over there for some 5 days or 6 days, and then I was released when I convinced them that I wasn't a spy. But with that said, I went into the streets, and I talked to the people, and these weren't people who were set up just to talk to me. I can assure you that when I was over there, and Doug, the same was true when you were over there, that was a cohesive nation. I'm not an apologist for Saddam Hussein. I'm not here to say that he was a wonderful leader. Obviously, I wouldn't think so, as he held me captive and I was terrified. I wasn't a hero, by the way. I begged to be set free, and subsequently I was in turn when they decided I wasn't a spy. But with that said, I can tell you his people at that point, after the 43-day bombing of Desert Storm, his people were united in opposition to the U.S. and the Allied forces in support of his office, in support of him. There wasn't crime like there was post-Desert Storm and post the destruction and death of Saddam Hussein. Since his death, the nation has splintered. He kept that country together in an iron fist. He united it. The Ba'ath Party united Iraq. And the bottom line is that the present leader, Maliki, is nothing but a U.S. puppet. The people are not stupid. They're fully aware of that. He has done nothing to unite the country. It is my understanding, I don't know if you've heard this or not, Doug, but that there has been an effort afoot essentially to balkanize the nation, to turn it into three, to partition it into a Sunni and a Shiite and a Kurd nation, three
that
nations.
That was talked about, what I knew about it, 25 years ago at least, so... I mean, you know, the other thing, too, and there was an incredible conference. This is back in, 1999. As everybody knows, the seat of education in the Western world is Cambridge University. I mean, you don't get any better. Cambridge University and Oxford in England, correct? I mean, that's the top end. And there was a massive conference called the Sanctions on Iraq, Background, Consequences, and Strategies. This was at Cambridge University, 13-14 November of 1999. And they put out an entire conference proceedings on that. And that book, again, I've given you the title, and the library code is ISBN 1-903-488-22-2. Again, Sanctions on Iraq, Background and Consequences and Strategies from Cambridge University. And again, it's online, so you can just, you know, pull that into any search engine that's going to pull up. So you can read about this. So back in 1999, we knew it was horrific. Everybody was warning it. You had the greatest university in the world with the greatest scholars in the world saying it's a nightmare, and this is how it all began, because Iraq had an incredible medical institution, incredible education, engineering, everything, until the decision was made to turn tail on Iraq after we use Iraq to destroy Iran. I mean,
yeah, and I think it's absolutely ludicrous that there's discussion right now of engaging Iran in an alleged peace process bring Iraq into compliance. That, to me, is absolutely ludicrous. Iran and Iraq were engaged in a 10-year war. They gassed each other into submission. And more than a million people were lost.
Biological weapons.
I beg your pardon?
Again, they attacked each other using U.S. chemical and biological weapons.
Right. Of course, the U.S. is arming both sides. And so now, for us, the only sane course of action for us in the U.S. is to take hands off Absolutely. Keep our hands out of it. There's nothing we can do about this sectarian battle. We've already done our worst. We have already encouraged Malachi to take his position, and to he's done nothing to help his people. You remember that we had a guest on, a veteran who had served in Fallujah?
Right.
And you remember that he was talking about reparations for Fallujah?
Yes.
And you remember, and I know this to be true, you know how many people are dying in Iraq, and in particular in and around Fallujah, of cancer. And that government's done nothing to assist their people. Absolutely nothing. So it's a failed, flawed government propped up by U.S. interests. And once again, this is a government that spiraled out of control. So for us to do anything but keep hands off, and if we want to give genuine humanitarian aid, and I mean food and water and basic necessities, I support that. But to arm either side to engage Iran into this is absolutely crazy.
Well, Kathy Kelly has been, along with, you know, the Catholic social groups and everything, have been putting food and drugs and medications into Iraq and Afghanistan for years and years and years. You know, and she's been nominated for the Nobel Prize. I don't know. I mean, you can't begin to count them now. But that hasn't happened. And every time she gets into trouble for actually taking food and actually served time in prison for taking medical supplies into Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, there's a real angel, and it's, you know, and you've got a disaster. But now the other thing, we've got the total catastrophes in the medical problems in the VA. Delay, deny, and avoid. And now we've got another individual, a Vietnam vet, who died in the parking lot trying to get care as they get bounced in and around there at Downey VA Hospital, the Great Lakes Navy Base. The Navy Hospital and Downey are combined together. And so we got a nightmare. Now, the story that broke again today is VA falls short on female medical issues. And again, a major, major report came on out. This is on armytimes.com right now. It was just posted 2:13. So what is that, 2 hours ago, 3 hours ago, 4 hours ago? I don't know. I don't know what time frame, you know, they were on when they posted it. And then the other story that's up there is a PTSD. Well, they still want to deal with PTSD as if it's a mental health issue. And, Patricia, you and I have been around this a long time and dealing with this forever and ever and ever, personally and working with individuals. PTSD is not a medical mental issue. PTSD is a crisis within the individual dealing with ethics and morality and knowing what is right and coming to the realization of what they've done.
Right.
And so all the medications you give, and the doctors just want to prescribe meds upon meds upon meds, which do absolutely cause suicides. I mean, when you get the medication, the pharmacist will tell you this enhances the probability of suicide.
Exactly.
So why are they giving it to anybody? I mean, I've told them to take a flying leap with it.
They do it with the intent of drugging these soldiers, hopefully, these veterans, hopefully into submission, so that they will not have the strength or the will to commit suicide. In the meantime, and I know you've heard this, the VA acknowledges that they have treated no more than 30% of the soldiers, the veterans, who are suffering from PTSD. And their target goal, even in the best of it, their target goal was to treat 60%. They've only treated 30% by their own acknowledgement. So, but, you know, they assert that we are losing one soldier a day to suicide. I would assert that that's just what they acknowledge. I would assert that those numbers are far higher. I know that the soldiers that I've worked with, those soldiers who were at, those veterans who were at the end of their rope, who reached out to me, were just minutes away, oftentimes, from killing themselves, from suicide.
Well, Steve Robinson has done such incredible work on trying to get medical care for everybody. He went out to Port Carson, Colorado, when this was all turning on a nightmare, and he yanked chains all over. He gave testimony, and he literally forced them to start doing some of the stuff right. Without Steve, it'd be far worse than where we are. And so, I mean, we got an angel up there. But again, the PTSD cases over and over, they want to drug you and keep you down. As Rollo said, they kill your memory and tame you on down so you don't think about it, and then they can convince you that what you did that was wrong is actually right. And that's why the Vietnam vet has never recovered from PTSD, and thousands upon tens and tens upon thousands of Vietnam vets still suffer from PTSD because they could never resolve the issue of the lies versus the reality.
Yeah,
and that's what's happening with Desert Storm.
Their whole approach is to drug the veteran into submission so that the soldier or the veteran somehow tamps down these memories and puts them away until, of course, they crop back up as a flashback or as a memory so profound that they cannot live with it, and subsequently they kill themselves. We had the father of a young man on, you may remember, Doug,
yeah,
a while back, who was even getting some kind of PTSD treatment, you may remember, and yet he still killed himself. Do you recall that?
I remember that, but you got to come back to what they call PTSD treatment. And, you know, all of us have gone through some or another, and others continue on, so we talk about it and we know what's happened. The treatment isn't any treatment. They sit there and hold your hands for a few minutes, make you feel good for a few minutes, because they're not resolving the problems with medical care. They're not resolving the problems with ethic and morality. They're not resolving the problems of the fact that your buddies have all died because they were denied medical care. I mean, for me personally, having issued the original order for medical care for depleted uranium as a theater health physicist during Desert Storm, and then got General Shinseki himself to personally issue the order that got me back to write the Army regulation that mandated thorough environmental cleanup training and total medical care, for the guy that ordered me to do it to be the one that's denying the care, that's a crime. That's an actual criminal offense. God, I can only hope that somebody takes this seriously and done something. Now, the other thing that's cropped up down here in Danville at the National Cemetery, they've lost staff. They don't have the money and the funding to provide adequate staffing, so they're having to cut back on funerals at the National Cemetery at Danville, Illinois. At the same time, the funerals are upping. But while that was happening, they bought all new furniture in the Danville VA that they didn't need, and the furniture they put in there is a torture chamber when you come in pain or sick to sit in. And then they cut the chaplain staff down to 3 from 7.
What number are you calling?
We got somebody calling in. The number is 888-874-4888. And speak up if
Let's
you call in.
Let's repeat that number, 888-874-4888. Say it again,
4888.
4888. 888-874. Say it again, please, Doug.
4888.
4888.
Yeah, so they've been given bonuses. I mean,
Gentrell.
Supposedly
yes.
$100 million in bonuses to the VA officials.
Again. Yeah.
That didn't do their job.
They received bonuses for, essentially, for giving inadequate care. And I might add, the legislation that's been proposed does not eliminate these bonuses. And as long as those bonuses are there, there will be incentive not to treat our veterans properly.
You know, we can't keep sending all of us to war. I mean, you've been fighting this and working with this stuff. I mean, damage assessment. You did the assessment on the Patriot missile, didn't you, for the Department of Defense?
Well, I worked actually with Joe Ciricione, who is now with the Carnegie Foundation, when he was working with a Armed Forces Committee. And at the time that the Patriot missile was accidentally firing, at the time my expertise was in an analysis of the electronic battlefield from the satellites to the ground radar. So I analyzed the issue and suggested a fix for the Patriot missile.
Wow.
While the war was ongoing.
It never ends. I mean, we had 32 Scuds come on us and blow up over our head. and the Patriot missile was so close to our, where we were sleeping, eating, and all the other stuff, that every time the Patriot missile went off, it literally shook the bed. You know, con, not a bed, it's a con,
well,
you know.
Well, once it, you know, it didn't fire one missile, it fired twice and three times, and often it missed its target, you know that.
Well, yeah, and the other thing, too, is, you know, when it did get close, and, you know, we remember, I've told you and I've sang it before, you remember there was a song back in the 60s, Raindrops Are Falling on My Head? We changed it to Scud Parts Are Falling on Our Head, but we're still under our bed. That's our cot.
The Kansas sure did
a lot of good. And you've seen, have you seen, Patricia? You've already seen. I've got shrapnel from the scuds that came down on us. God almighty.
Well, you know, I was over there, as you know, so I saw the damage. And so, unfortunately, what went up came down. So when there was a Patriot missile fire, there was not only one fire, there was twice and three times firing at scuds, which didn't impact the scuds. So when a scud missile fired, you had one scud, and then you'd have two or three or four Patriots missing their target, so you had essentially five missiles coming down, the debris from five missiles.
Yeah,
so,
and then we definitely confirmed the chemical and biological weapons on the scud. Andres Carnegie Bob, Tom Little did that, Ulrich Bauer, all of our team. You know, guys that are now dead, Jim Runge, Andres is dead. You know, John Sitton, these are the guys that actually did the assessment. We confirmed it was there. I mean, down at Escan Village over by the wheat towers and everything else, the grain elevators definitely scud with chemical agents, absolutely came in there. And as Rollo said, when we had all the haze and the stuff came in right after detonation, the alarms went off, and we got the pictures. We took everybody at 3rd MedCom and all Escan Village to what we call MOP 5. I don't know if people even understand what MOP 5 is, but MOP 5 is where you're totally in the mop suit, encased in your rain poncho, and then what you use is all the duct tape you can find to totally encapsulate it and lock it out completely. Because all this stuff with the dusty agents just went right through, the standard mop suit, and we knew the mop suits were ineffective. And we knew all of the respirators, again, the gas masks, the 17 or the 40 were ineffective. The 9s were ineffective because, again, the way they work, I mean, Patricia, you've worked on some of this stuff. It's 0.5 and 0.6 micron, but the actual particulates and everything are down to 0.01 micron. So it's like, you know, an open barn door flying right through into the lungs. And that's why we got so many with all these respiratory problems. And now, again, it's coming out again in the last week with the Shinseki failures. The VA failures, now they're saying, well, what are all these respiratory problems and where did they come from? Well, Colonel Andres Carnegie Bob defined that 20 years ago in Alaskan disease, didn't he? I mean, Jesus.
Doug, let me just interject. Soldiers, veterans, if you're trying to call in, it is my understanding that they're not picking up, and I'm trying to ring in myself, as a matter of fact, because Terrell Green, who is the son of Lawrence Cinnamon, the young Vietnam veteran who died in the parking lot there. Terrell Green has been trying to ring in, and he rang me on my cell phone. I'm speaking from a hard line. So soldiers and veterans, if you're trying to ring in, I don't know what the problem is, but there's no pickup. Doug?
Yeah.
I know there are veterans who are trying to ring in, and they're not picking up.
Well, all we can do is hope that they're hearing us, because I haven't got any way to get in touch with them.
Yeah, I'm trying to ring them on the phone here as we speak. But at any rate, so the bottom line is that vis-a-vis our Desert Storm soldiers, our Desert Storm veterans.
Hello? Yeah, who do we have online with us?
This is Terrell Green calling you.
Well, fantastic, Terrell. Welcome to Warrior Connection. Can you
please tell us
about your father and what all's happened, please?
Yeah, I came to the VA April 28th, and I pulled into the VA in North Chicago, and I pulled into the emergency department. And I went inside and told them that I had Mr. Simmons outside. He was semi-conscious. And the valet told me to go around to the emergency department. So I proceeded to the emergency department, where I was talking to a lady named Wanda, who told me to wait a minute. was going to go see what she could do. And so I waited and 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 waited. And then she came back to me and told me to go back outside, get in the truck, drive them around to the other side. So I did that. I drove around to the other side. I was hoping that there would be someone there to receive us, but I don't think she made any contact with anybody. So I waited and waited and waited in the back. And so when I got impatient, I went up to the ambulance and asked them to help my father because he was right here in the truck not responsive enough.
And they told me
to wait, and because they couldn't help me, so I waited and waited and waited and waited and waited, and then they called somebody in the hospital, the ambulance did, and then somebody came out and told us to pull into the ambulance bay. We pulled into the ambulance bay, and I said about 3 minutes after that, they took them out of the truck, took them inside and started CPR and respiratory treatment. And came to me about 20 minutes later and told me that he was dead.
So about 25 minutes went by, am I right, Terrell, from the time that you arrived at the VA, and then about 25 minutes went by and he actually died in the parking lot there, is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Terrell, where did you guys come from? You live in Waukegan, North Chicago, or Libertyville, or Mundelein, or somewhere around there?
Waukegan. We're about 6 or 7 minutes away from the VA.
Okay, so you're just minutes away from the VA there.
Right.
Oh, right. Man. Did you?
And he had sought his care all along from the VA. Is that right, Terrell?
Yes, ma'am.
Right. And he was on the Agent Orange Registry.
Yes, ma'am.
And when you first talked to that valet person there, you told him that your dad, that you felt that your dad was having difficulty breathing?
Yes, ma'am.
Was your dad gasping for breath then, and you told him that?
Yes, ma'am, I did.
Did anybody actually, did they make any attempt to come out to the vehicle to help your father or to get him into the ER and stabilize him at all?
No, sir, they didn't.
That's incredible. I mean, the Lake County coroner up there in Waukegan, I mean, it's definitely got to be totally involved in all this. You need to demand a full autopsy, demand a complete hearing.
We've talked to him, Doug, and we won't discuss that on air, okay?
Right. I'm just making a recommendation.
Right.
I mean, this has happened over and over again.
In actuality, that is, by definition, homicide. That is one person causing the death of another. Thereafter, it depends upon what a court would decide. But by definition, your dad's death, Terrell, and the death of these other soldiers, these other veterans who have died as a consequence of the negligence and the maltreatment of the VA, is by actual definition not only malicious negligence, but in some cases, it is actually homicide. And I want to reiterate that Terrell's dad, Lawrence, was the recipient of a Purple Heart. He had served 7 years. He served honorably. And for him to die like that, at the mercy of an uncaring, unthinking VA, is a disgrace.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. I mean, I felt like, here it is, I got a veteran here. He served his country. He tried his best to do everything in his power to make sure that he showed his dedication to his unit. And all I did was feel that I had to get him there to the VA, and they were going to take care of him. And here it is, I get him there, and they didn't take care of him, and they're bothering me, and I don't really know how to handle it.
Right now, I think we need to make a call, Patricia, and Terrell will make this call for you. Ladies and gentlemen, members of Congress, senior leadership in the military or the VA, if you're listening to our program, you need to come up and do something now. You need to help this family. It's too late to help Lawrence, but you need to help the family. You need to help all the rest of the veterans in our nation, because day in and day out, we hear about people having delayed, denied, ineffective care. I mean, it's happening to me, you know, and everybody else. Patricia, I mean, all of us were hearing the numbers we're hearing and seeing is an ongoing flood. And for total abandonment, no wonder. I mean, it's serious in understanding why the PTSD is a crisis.
What's that garbling? Do you hear a garble?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible we're having, you know, phone problems again because we had screaming on this thing and whistles and all kinds of stuff, but that has happened. You know, Eric doesn't like us talking about this stuff, and Mikey doesn't, and DOD sure doesn't, and the VA doesn't. Boy, they're mad at blue blazes at us.
Terrell, are you still with us?
Yes, ma'am. The thing that I keep thinking about is how they didn't follow the protocol, which was when I went to the valet, he was supposed to call Eternal 911. And when I went to the emergency department, instead of them sending me away, they were supposed to contact Eternal 911 to make sure that somebody got out there to help Mr. Sennett. But it's just none of that was done. I just feel like he was just violated.
He was violated. Of course you feel like he was violated. And the unfortunate part of it is that here's a man who placed his faith and his trust in his country. He served his country honorably. And once again, he placed his faith and his trust in his country, and he went to the VA for help. And this is how he was treated. So I can well appreciate, Terrell, the extraordinary pain that you're experiencing as a consequence of this. And, Doug, now this is April 29th, right?
Yeah, April 28th, I'm sorry.
28th. Doug, are you there?
Yeah.
So you know full well that despite the ballyhoo and the song and the dance and the dog and pony show that's going on in Washington, this is still happening in the field.
Yeah, because I've made phone call after phone call, and nobody returns the phone calls to the Danville VA. And I know everybody is making phone calls all over the nation to the VAs trying to get help, but it's still being turned away. So it's nothing new. And, I mean, we've been yelling and screaming at the top of our lungs for a long time. And members of Congress and members of the senior leadership in the VA and everybody have known about it. I mean, Patricia, you and I personally went to the director of the Danville VA with the chief of staff, and we brought up all these problems in a meeting that you and I held with them that we requested, and they didn't do anything at that time. Everything we pointed out now is now, you know, Jesus, now there's some accountability. Well, there's no accountability because there's no way to hold them accountable. President Obama, we elect you president. You're commander-in-chief. Sir, we need you to step up and demand action, hold total accountability for all this stuff, end the nightmare. Because when you come out here and say, in the story again, flood of PTSD cases coming, it's not a medical issue. You can't send people into war without proper training, without proper equipment, and then don't give them medical care when they come back. And to deny him medical care, in this case, where Lawrence gets to the ER, the VA, and deny him medical care, and he dies.
In the parking lot.
In the parking lot of the Downey Great Lakes. I mean, to me right now, again, I mean, if we got anybody listening to national accreditation of hospitals, you need to suspend the accreditation for Great Lakes and Downey immediately.
Yes, and let me just reiterate with a call out to veterans, and the wives of veterans, and the brothers and sisters of veterans, the girlfriends, the boyfriends of veterans, I want you please to call me. If you have suffered at the hands of the VA, if you have suffered in the past, and if you're suffering now, I want you to pick up the phone and call me, please. It's Patricia Axelrod, and it's the Desert Storm Think Tank and All Veterans Advocate. And my phone number is 1-775-412-5980. Again, that number is 775-412-5980. And my email address is P Axelrod. That's PAXELROD 1675@yahoo.com. Veterans and the people who love veterans, please, you must stand up. It is within your power to stop this. There are millions of you. If you will unite, we can stop this. We can stop this if you'll unite. Doug, you want to give out any information?
Well, yeah. I mean, just get through to everything. We've got incredible resources. Again, Congressman, our local congressman here is doing everything again. And he's trying to get the information on out. And you can contact Rodney Davis here in the 13th District in Illinois, downtown at Champaign. And again, 217-403-4690. One thing that we do have, and I wanted to go over this again before the time gets up, and again, we put this out, Patricia, you and I worked at it, Congressman Davis can send it out to everybody. The VA, Provision 11, put out a clinician's guide confirming all the health effects and everything, and this includes Agent Orange also, and confirming everything and directing medical care and telling everybody what the problems are and what to go for. But even what's happening when the directors put this out, and Patricia, you and I have looked at this and discussed it with them, they don't give it to the doctors, and they sure as heck don't give it to the sick kids.
No, they sure don't.
You know, and the other thing, too, on this stuff, we've got the burn pit memo that we got from a senior leader at the Pentagon that cared enough to get us out to us. So that's out there, and they deny any correlation between exposures and health effects. But it's just it's a total nightmare, but it's going back to how do you tell the truth about the casualties we have when we send everybody into war without justification? And Vietnam was that way. I've had to deal with that now. I mean, it's been over 40 years since I came back. 43 years since I came back from Vietnam after
Terrell, tell us about the quality of care that your dad received at the VA. How old was he when he died? He was born in 46, is that right?
Yeah, he was. Yes, ma'am, he was a 68, going to be 69.
Uh-huh. And I can only presume that they did not adequately care for him, or he wouldn't have died prematurely.
The way it was, once we got him inside, it was like they had a bunch of students and a bunch of trainees around him. In fact, it seemed like they were the ones that were administrating the CPR, because at some point I heard the head doctor say something like, well, that's not the one we want right there. He can't do that. Go find such and such. And at the time, I was wondering why such and such wasn't there on the scene when he got in there, you know. And then it was like they had been doing the CPR respiration for about 20, 30 minutes, and I was wondering why they hadn't got him there and all that time, that it was like students there instead of professionals, and I thought that was very unprofessional.
And had you called them in advance of your arrival of the VA? Had you called them to tell them to expect your dad, or did you just set out? You were only 5 or 6 minutes away, right?
Yeah, I wasn't that far away when I got there. I went immediately to the valet, who I wish he would have called. Wish he would have called 911, because maybe my father would still be here right now had they did that.
Right, and again, some 25 minutes went by from the time that you arrived there to the time they actually got him into the ER and began CPR, but your dad was already dead, wasn't he, unfortunately, when they brought him in?
Yes, ma'am, that's right.
You know, CPR and all this stuff, I mean, again, you know, we're talking about CPR, and I taught CPR for years, and I've done CPR. I mean, my success rate is about 30%, but you have to combine both the chest compressions and the oxygen flow in there, because after a period of time, I mean, you don't have any oxygenation of the blood, just pushing around doesn't do any good. But the other idea, too, you've got only a couple minutes the time it stops where you can start.
That's what Terrell is saying. Yeah, what did you say, Terrell?
That's why I was so upset. Yeah, that's why I was so upset, because when I brought him there and they took him out of the truck, as they were taking him out, they seen that he had oxygen on. But once they took him out of the truck, they didn't give him any oxygen, and they didn't give him any once they got him out of the truck, and they didn't give him any on his way into the emergency room. They didn't give him any until he actually got on the table. So, you know, he probably went another whole minute or two from the truck inside the facility without having no oxygen on at all, because they took it off of him.
I mean, when I've done on the ambulance
That's
and bring
amazing,
him in, we've continuously
Terrell.
Given
That's
O2
amazing.
And done compression until we got him right on the table. So, I mean, I've been on the gurney with him. We carried him in on the ambulance where I was doing it, maintaining all
of this. They didn't have no gurney, sir. They didn't use a gurney at all. They actually pulled up to the van in a wheelchair.
Oh, my God. They put him in a wheelchair?
Yes, ma'am.
They took him out of your truck. And was he breathing at that point? Did you think he was breathing?
Well, I actually put my head on his stomach, and I heard, like, faint signs of him still being here. once before, this was before they took the oxygen off of him and before they took him out of the truck, because once they opened the door to the truck and was standing there with the wheelchair, I had to scream and yell at them, unfasten my seatbelt, and go around and put my head on his stomach and my head on his neck and scream at them to take him out of the truck because they were just standing there looking at him.
Oh. This is inexcusable.
There's no way to describe this at all.
I mean, we've heard it over and over and over again.
This is just a nightmare. Terrell, I cannot tell you how sorry I am. And anyone who's listening to this must feel the same sorrow and horror as I'm feeling listening to this. And I'm hoping that on behalf of Terrell and on behalf of his good father, Lawrence, who again, as I say, is a Purple Heart recipient, on behalf of him, I'm praying that you folks will speak up and on behalf of Lawrence and on behalf of Steve Robinson, who died. This program is dedicated not only to Steve Robinson, but also to your dad, Terrell. We're dedicating this program to him as well. Is that right, Doug?
Absolutely.
Please give us your dad's full name and his age at the time of his death, dear.
His first name is Lawrence. His middle name is Seabury. His last name is Sinnin, S-I-N-N-I-N. And your last question was, how old was he when he died? He was 68.
And he served in the Army in Vietnam.
Yeah, he served in the Army. He was in the infantry.
He served in Vietnam and in Germany.
What unit was he in the Army, sir?
I don't have that information in front of me, but I know he was with the infantry unit.
What would you tell Terrell? We know we have some folks who are listening here that might be in a position to do something about this. Tell us, what would you tell those folks, and what would you say to other veterans now? What will you say, Terrell?
Well, what I would say is, I know it's a hard thing to go through, and I'm definitely feeling that pain right now, but I also feel like I have to do something to make sure that this never happens again, and that's my main concern, because as much as me and my dad love the veterans, we know that this situation can happen again to somebody else, and I'm in it to make sure that it doesn't happen again to another family.
Well, Terrell, thank you very much, and, you know, we're going to miss your father. Obviously, you and your family will miss him greatly. Hopefully, God has got him at his right hand now, and he can help us. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I hear over and over again, people come up and say, thank you for your service, thank you for your service. Ladies and gentlemen, thanking us for a service doesn't do any good when people are dying, denied medical care at the VA, whether it's the Danville VA where John Sitton was denied, or up there Downey Great Lakes Navy Hospital where Lawrence Simmons was denied care just recently and died in the parking lot. This is inexcusable. Aaron Barnes was denied care over at Galesburg, Illinois, and he died. How many more? Bill Orell was denied care at Birmingham, and he died.
We want to thank you, Terrell, for joining us, and we want to thank you for speaking out, Terrell, and sharing this very painful experience, because it's something that people need to hear. It isn't just veterans who are listening. It's others who are listening, and they need to hear the truth. So we want to thank you very much for joining us, Terrell.
Terrell, I got a resource for you, and the phone number is a chaplain, Tom Mills, and his phone number is down here at Danville, area 800-320-8387. Chaplain Tom Mills again, 800-320-8387. And just call him up. You can call him 24 hours a day, and he will help. He's done that already, and I'll send him an email.
Say that number one more time for me.
1-800-320-8387 and ask for Chaplain Tom Mills, M-I-L-L-S.
And Terrell, you know that I'll be working with you on this.
And our music is coming up. Ladies and gentlemen, I can't begin to describe tonight's show dedicated to Steve and Lauren Sims. And again, he died, denied medical care in the hospital parking lot at Great Lakes Navy Hospital, Downville and Downey in North Chicago, Illinois. Pray for him, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you. Thank you, Terrell. Thank you, Patricia.
Thank you, sir.